All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, CEO and founder of Brightly, the number one destination for conscious consumers around the world. At Good Together, we value the planet over perfection and believe that you can make positive things happen for the planet every day by being a conscious consumer and an informed citizen. Listen in as I chat with various experts about living and consuming responsibly. This week, we're resharing a past episode we love, featuring Laura Fenton, author of The Little Book of Living Small. In it, she shows us how to adopt a tiny living mindset regardless of the square feet you're in. Enjoy. Hey, Laura, welcome to Good Together. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
For sure. So we generally like to get started by having you just do a brief introduction to yourself and sort of why you got inspired to write your new book, The Little Book of Living Small.
Sure. Well, I have been a writer and an editor for my whole career, working in magazines and also a little bit of writing for websites. But this is my first full-length book. And in a lot of ways, it was many years in the making. Way back in 2006, I started writing a personal blog about living in a small space. And it's just a topic that's always intrigued me, partly because it's my reality. But as I have become sort of increasingly aware of the climate crisis and how our daily choices are tied to sustainability, I realized that living small is also a choice that is good for the earth, and that has made me even more passionate about it.
That's amazing. And I feel like a lot of people are really drawn to the idea of living in a tiny home. At first, they get drawn in with some of these beautiful interiors that we see. Maybe they see a show on HGTV or see a beautiful Airstream kind of pass them on the road. And then as they kind of really dive into things, they do start to realize, yes, like tiny living is truly a way to express your values and have literally a smaller footprint. People talk about reducing our footprint all the time, but I really personally feel like tiny living is absolutely taking that and living it in a full. So Laura, I was curious. So you mentioned a little bit about why you got started thinking about tiny living, but I wonder if you can kind of even bring us back a little bit further and tell us a little bit more about how you got started on your journey of actually living tiny.
Anyone who lives in New York City lives small almost by default.
For sure.
And so I've lived in a series of small spaces, from like that very first dorm room that I was sharing with three women to today. I live in a pretty small apartment with my family. We're in 690 square feet for three people. It's a one bedroom that we converted into a two bedroom. So when I was younger, living small was partly just a pure product of budget. But as I've gotten older, as my husband and I started a family, we really made a conscious decision to live small, to keep our costs low. And it was a way for us to be able to stay in the city that we love.
That's awesome. Yeah, I actually had a similar experience when I moved out to the Bay Area, which is where we're based now. I got started by living in a 500 square feet apartment with my husband and my giant golden retriever. And we previously had been living in a three bedroom home in the Seattle area. And before that, my husband and I are both from Texas. So we're super bit used to living in large spaces. And at first, I was very intimidated by the thought of going into a really small space. My husband is also very much a DIY tool person. So we had so many things that we actually ended up having to put in storage, just because we didn't have a garage or anything like that. But anyway, as I started to pare things down and really just edit my life, edit my things, and even edit the aesthetic that we were going for in our space, I started to realize that it was very freeing, like that having that framework and that discipline to me started to give me more freedom in saying, you know what, like maybe I don't need to acquire 8 new pillows like I might have had to with a larger home. I can perhaps spend a fraction of that money on one really great quality pillow because I've only got room for one on my small bench. So for me, I started to see this freedom. And I thought I just really, really loved it.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me of a story that I share in the book. Before we had kids, shortly after we got married, my husband had moved into my apartment, a one bedroom, and we felt that we had really, you know, outgrown it, that we were ready for more space. We were thinking, you know, about a family eventually. And so we decided we were going to sell this apartment that had been my single apartment. And the real estate broker immediately said, oh, this place is too full of stuff. It's too cluttered for me to show.
I feel like they always say that, right?
Yeah. Can you move some things into storage? And we said, oh yeah, of course. You know, we know that it's too full. That's why we want to move. So we rented a storage space. We paid a premium for a place that we could walk to from our apartment. And we spent a whole day moving things out to the storage space. And then our broker came back and she looked around and she said, keep going. So we spent another day moving things out. And afterwards, like the apartment felt amazing. It suddenly felt like we had room to breathe and it didn't feel too small at all. And it looked great. And of course, you know, she sold it. But New York City real estate, all of that goes very slowly. We ended up having the storage unit for 6 months. And wow. In 6 months, we never needed any of the things.
That's right. You didn't even walk over there, right? Yes. We did the same thing.
And it, when it came time for us to finally move and get into our new place, we opened the door up to this room full of boxes. And it was almost a feeling of guilt to say, you know, we don't even know what's in here. We don't have any, you know, feeling about what might be inside of these boxes. And I would say that was very close to the time that like I first started reading about the zero waste movement and really starting to think more deeply about our consumption. So I do think there is something freeing about living with less.
Absolutely. 100%.
And, you know, finding, pairing back to the things that you truly love and truly need can make your home more meaningful and make it a place that you feel more comfortable to be.
Yes, I agree 100%. And the other thing I was going to mention was, yes, we did the same thing where we did not even walk back to that storage unit. Or if we did, for us, it was very, very minimal. Like maybe we went two or three times in the course of a year. And I feel like oftentimes people who are used to living in bigger spaces, they have an equivalent of a storage unit in their house, right? They have their attic or their basement or someplace where they've kind of just shoved things out of the way. And what usually ends up happening is you forget what's in there, to your point. So then a lot of times you'll buy a duplicate of what you already had because you can't even remember what's in there. And I think, you know, the more we can, as consumers, of course, buy less. That's always the number one tip we give to people on Good Together when somebody says, hey, I'm ready to live ethically and sustainably. The first thing we say is buy less. But the other thing that's, you know, even harder than that, to be honest, is to be really mindful about what you already have and like taking an inventory, making sure you know where everything is. You don't have to be the most organized person in the world. I think oftentimes people are like, oh gosh, I'm going to have to go hire a home organizer or spend a ton of time or money doing that. But I mean, even if you literally just have like an inventory sheet of what you've got in your home is such an interesting tip to do. And it's something that actually, as we are all now facing more time at home because of the ongoing COVID-19 crisis at the time of this recording, I feel like that's something that is, you know, potentially an actionable thing people can do if they are bored and they want something to do.
Yes. And I mean, I think that it's also something to think about is about responsibly finding new homes for the things you hope to give away.
Yes.
That's something I'm still working on all the time, is to hopefully find a new life for something that we have, you know, grown out of or moved on from.
Absolutely. And that's challenging as well. When we, you know, I actually just took a huge bag of clothing out of my closet, which I had thought that I had pared it down. I did a pretty big closet exercise about a year ago. And then I recently was in a situation where I needed to live out of a suitcase for a few weeks. I was down in LA and realized I was totally fine living out of that suitcase and didn't really need half the things that I thought I did in my closet. So went ahead and took a bunch of clothing out. And also, to your point, was trying to think through, yeah, how do I find the best new homes for these things as possible? And I feel like I definitely made a pile that I think could go into like a Poshmark situation. I made another pile that was more like a ThredUp where, you know, I wasn't going to invest the time and resources into taking individual photos of these pieces, but I figured, okay, I'll maybe just send that to ThredUp. And then the final piece was for donation. And I think a lot of times some people just generally think to donate, but we do have such an excess of clothing and furniture and home goods that are kind of just sitting around. People think that they need to be donated, and oftentimes they don't actually even end up in good homes. One tip that we like to share is like using Craigslist responsibly if that's active in your area, which it is most of the time. And when I actually think about bringing new things into my home, I would say we've got about 50% of the items in our home, like the decor and furniture, are from Craigslist. And the other 50% we purchase new. But I try to find new. We like, my husband and I also like to think of Craigslist as like a game a little bit. We like to have fun with it. We actually have a beautiful bed frame that we got from, we got from Craigslist, but it was originally a room and board piece, which if listeners are familiar with room and board, it's crazy expensive. It's beautiful stuff, crazy expensive. Never in my life did I think I would be able to purchase a bed frame from Room and Board. But we actually found this bed frame on Craigslist. It was almost new. It had been sitting in a guest room from someone down here in the Bay Area. And they literally gave it, I think they let it off their hands, gave it to us for like $200, which for that was just such a steal. So we like to like kind of engage our deal hunting mind too.
Yeah, well, in my experience, if you're also trying, if you're moving or you're just getting rid of something because it no longer suits your needs, the free section of Craigslist, you can always find someone who is so excited to take your furniture off your hands. Another resource that I like are buy nothing groups.
Okay.
are hyper-local Facebook groups, and they're people who are striving to buy nothing. And you can post things that you are looking to get rid of, or also if you're looking for something specific, you can post to your group and say, you know, we're expecting baby number two and we already got rid of the crib. Does anyone, you know, have one that they are looking to find a new home for? So that's another option if Craigslist is not in your community, is to look and see if there is a buy nothing group.
That's such a good resource. I love that. We'll definitely try and find a few of those and link to them in the show notes. I feel like that's fascinating. So Laura, I wonder if you can, so you've talked a little bit about how you got started living small. And I wondered if you could share a little bit about what inspired you to actually write your new book, because I feel like writing a book is such a personal decision. It comes from a place of wanting to share knowledge with the world about something you're truly passionate about. So would love to know, yeah, where that inspiration came from, maybe kind of what gave you the kick to start it as well would be interesting.
Well, there are a couple factors that played into it. One, I was the lifestyle editor at Parents Magazine for many years, and we ran an article about families living in small spaces, which, you know, I had been thinking about and been passionate about for a long time, but I was pretty surprised when it quickly became one of the best ranked stories we'd run in our home section. And that fact that it resonated so strongly with parents' huge audience was like, that was a clue that this was a topic that deserved greater exploration. Another thing that made me want to write my own book was that I have a library of books about small spaces, many of which I love, but a frustration I had was that they rarely felt relatable to me. A lot of the small spaces that are featured in design books are weekend homes,
yes,
or pied-à-terres, or even like a guest house or suite.
Yes, I've seen that.
And they just didn't speak to me. There also is sort of a niche of books really related to like the true tiny homes, which is also not how most people live. What I was interested in were individuals, couples, and families who were living in spaces that were smaller than most people's and who also had chosen that. Of course, there are so many people who live in small spaces out of necessity, and for this book, I was really looking for people who had said, you know, this is a choice that I'm making. So I was hoping to create a kind of a different kind of book. Having worked at magazines, I also know all the tricks that magazines employ to produce the beautiful photos that run in their pages. And I set a goal to make this book like a little more honest. We didn't bring in stylists and a truckload of props. These homes were photographed really as people live in them. And it's a very real look inside of people's homes.
Absolutely. I actually want to talk a little bit about that, because it's something that I've also thought too. And so, yes, I think that the tiny homes that we often see are not necessarily the ones that people are living in full time. And so it's really encouraging that you saw this hole in the market and wanted to kind of speak from a more authentic place. The other thing that I think is interesting is exactly what you just said around magazines and some of even like, you know, blogs and things like that, that are truly not even photographing the spaces as they're actually lived in, right? They pull everything out, or they maybe put in different pieces because they want to feature them in the magazine. And so, yeah, coming about this from a very raw, authentic space is definitely missing, I feel like, in the overall ecosystem. And, you know, I know that you, in the book, you mention quite a few advantages to living small. And you also mention that, you know, for many people, living small is not a choice, but a necessity. So can we talk a little bit about that and kind of what those advantages are to living small, regardless if it's, you know, a choice or a necessity? Like, how can we all benefit from this?
Well, I mean, in our current moment, the thing that comes first to mind is that a small home will inevitably cost less, whether it's to buy it or to rent it, but also to maintain it.
Yes.
As we are weathering this pandemic and the economic fallout that is accompanying it, I've been in touch with a lot of the people who are in the book. And, you know, some of them, there's a mom, a single mom with two boys whose home we feature this a very small apartment. And when she and I were in touch, she said, you know, I'm so grateful that we don't have a big mortgage payment right now. I'm so happy to know that, like, we can get through this, that we have, you know, been frugal in our choice of where to live, and it won't negatively impact us. And, you know, my husband and I feel the exact same way. We're so grateful that we can sustain our home, even, you know, during this time of uncertainty. So costs is huge, especially right now. Sustainability is number two for sure. We use fewer materials to build smaller homes and to renovate them. We use less energy to heat, cool, and power smaller homes. They are all around a more ecological choice for, you know, many reasons. We could go into the efficiencies of city living versus suburban living, but living in a small space is also living more lightly on the earth.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think the point you just made too about financial freedom is something that, you know, I talked a second ago about, like, mental freedom from not having to be overwhelmed with things, or, you know, having a bit more simplicity in your life. But yes, financial freedom is also very key here. And, you know, you're right. In the current climate, it's very, very, you know, there's a huge necessity in making sure that we can live within our means and, you know, really being proud when we can, and coming up with that type of positivity, I think, is really key. You also mentioned, I think, in the book, you talk a little bit about how, you know, the tiny homes are also easier to maintain. So of course, like, there's less space to clean. And actually, I acutely feel this right now. We ended up leaving our small apartment, because it was not in close to our work. So my husband and I now live in Oakland, and we do live in a home, and it's bigger than that previous apartment. And so I also find myself being like, yeah, I wish I had less places to clean.
Less to clean. And, you know, I mean, we live in this tiny apartment, but I feel like my sisters-in-law, who both live in, you know, big suburban houses, have, like, spend twice as much time picking up after their kids. Their kids have a bedroom and a playroom and have acquired enough toys to fill those spaces. There's something about, you know, the more space you have, you fill it with things, and things need maintenance.
Yes.
So the forced simplicity is part of why a smaller home is easier to maintain. It's also, when you think about maintenance in, like, the longer term, when you're thinking about renovating or updating, you can often make a choice to go for a higher quality material or, you know, a nicer appliance when you're shopping for something that's a smaller quantity, which is nice. It means that you can sort of have the luxury while still having less.
Absolutely. I fully agree. I think it's a really great side effect of this wonderful thing that we're calling living small, living tiny. So that gets me to our next point, which is, regardless if you are, maybe let's think about a few different scenarios. So one may be that you're already living small, like, you're in a small space, or you've, you know, maybe you've even gone the extra mile and actually built your own tiny house and are living out and like doing what we all read about. Maybe you're doing that, but probably most of our listeners here are a bit in the middle where they're living in spaces that are probably medium-sized, but they have this desire and really yearning to live more simply and live smaller. So I wondered if you could give our audience a few tips that anyone could do that are, you know, really in line with your ethos on living small.
Well, we've been talking a little bit about this, but the idea of living with what you love and editing your home down to those objects that are truly loved and really useful, that is something you can do whether your house is 200 square feet or, you know, 4,000 square feet. So taking the time to edit and to declutter is an exercise that any size home it will benefit from. And likewise, what we were just saying about, like, if you're renovating or if you're shopping, valuing quality over quantity is, that's wise advice for anybody.
Yes.
But it really is part of like the ethos of living small is really when you are bringing something into your home to make sure that it is the very best, that it's something that will last a lifetime.
Absolutely. Returning to those old values, like our grandparents and people before them, you know, they didn't have the, you know, the money nor the infrastructure to have all of these disposable, poorly made things. So, you know, of course, I always like to think about an old pair of like Levi's, you know, this denim that was made to last to these miners, you know, years and years, and think about how many pairs of jeans we all have. That one always sticks in my mind. But yes, I mean, we can also think about like an artisan made rocking chair or like an heirloom quality piece of furniture. Like those things last because they're quality, right? So trying to find those things and then really, really giving them love, I think.
Finding stylish footwear that's also sustainable isn't easy. Trust me, I've tried. But thanks to Vionic's Beach line, I've officially found a pair of sneakers I never want to take off. Vionic Beach is great for conscious consumers as the shoes feature an eco-friendly outsole, 80% of which is rubber and 20% of which is made from a soybean-based compound. These shoes also feature a canvas fabric made with natural materials. And they're completely vegan certified, so you can rest assured that no animals were harmed in the making of the shoes. Something I also love about these shoes is the fact that they are completely washable. I love going on long walks and hikes around San Francisco where I live, so my shoes are bound to get dirty after a while. It's great knowing that once it's time to give them a good clean, I can toss them into the washing machine and it's completely effortless and they always come out looking and feeling brand new. Comfort is also key when looking for sustainable footwear, and this line delivers support and comfort without sacrificing style. In fact, Vionic is so confident that you love your new kicks that they have a 30-day wear test. That means you can return them for a full refund within 30 days, if you're not satisfied for any reason, even if you've worn them outside. Are you ready to step into the world of sustainable footwear? Check out the Vionic Beach line at vionicshoes.com and use the code BRIGHTLY at checkout for free shipping on your order. That's VIONICSHOES.com and the code BRIGHTLY for free shipping on your new pair of eco-friendly shoes.
And waiting and saving until you can make that investment. I mean,
yes.
Know that, you know, I don't mean to throw shade on the Swedish retailer with blue bags, but we, you know, in many instances, when I bought something there, because that was what my budget allowed, it wasn't something that held up over time. And it might have been better just to wait, even if it meant waiting a while and, you know, maybe sleeping with just your box spring on the floor before, you know, investing in the bed frame, to not go for the quick fix.
For sure.
And something else that we both touched on offsite storage. That is a tip I would say for anyone, like if anybody listening has a self-storage unit, like tackle that first. That auxiliary space that you're spending money on every month is the first thing you should do to be living a smaller, tinier life. Figure out what's in there, figure out what to get rid of, what you can actually fit into your home, but trying to actually, you know, use the space you have in your home and not being spilling over into extra storage space.
For sure. And the other way I've heard this mentioned is we talked a little bit about people using attics and basements and things like this as those kind of equivalents. And one really interesting way to kind of give yourself a positive reason to get started on this is, you know, think about turning your attic or basement or something into a space that you'd like to spend more time in. So like maybe that is the quote unquote proverbial man cave. Maybe that is the, you know, the arts and crafts room that you really have seen on Pinterest and want and have thought, oh, well, I need to move somewhere else to get that. I think, you know, freeing up space and then using it in a smart way can really be a good, good motivator to go in there and clean things out.
Yeah. And I think that that exercise of, you know, dreaming a little is also always valuable. One of the homeowners featured in my book is a professional organizer. Her name is Shira Gill. And she thought that she would have to move out of her home to get like the dream kitchen that she imagined. One day, a decorator friend said, well, why don't you just knock down half that wall between the dining room and the kitchen and paint everything white? You know, like something that an outside point of view said, your dream kitchen is here.
That's amazing.
Right? Like what you're craving might actually be there within your own space. And yet the statistics on garages that people can't park their cars in because they're filled with stuff. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to tackle those places that we squirrel things away.
Yes. And we all know one of those garages. We all just pictured one in our head right now, I believe.
Well, yeah. And there's also a lot of research too about how the disorder and unfinished projects, these things, they weigh on us. And the more of them there are in our life, it's sort of, you know, adding to our mental load. So actually bringing order to some of those neglected spaces in your home, whether your home is small or large, can actually really give you a more positive outlook in every part of your life, not just in your day-to-day home life. Another thing that is part of my philosophy of living small or living tiny is to be a borrower. I just love to borrow things. I am the most avid library user. When I can, I borrow cake pans from friends, power tools from neighbors. If there's a way that you can get away without buying another thing, that is like the most ecological and economical choice that you can make for your home.
Absolutely. We're big on this too. We like to use Nextdoor to offer our things and also connect with other people in the neighborhood. I know there's actually a few startups that have tried to make apps and things in this space. I can't think of a name of one off the top of my head, but I do know that there's a few. So I also think too, just thinking creatively about how you can get connected with these different tools, because like I said, my husband he does some woodworking and is, you know, he's very handy, which is great. That gives him a lot of joy, but that also requires a lot of tools. So we do have a lot of tools in our space. And actually before he buys something now, I am always like, can we borrow this? If not, like, is there another use for it other than the one that you want to purchase for? Like, we have this whole little thing we chat about, but it's really interesting. So I kind of want to move into the last few questions we like to ask every guest on Good Together. So the first question is, I wondered if you could share one or two actionable tips that you have on living ethically and sustainably. So it doesn't necessarily have to be related to tiny living. It can be, but I know we've already covered quite a few. So would love to hear from you on those one or two tips.
Yeah, I mean, if someone asked me what the best thing you could do to live a sustainable, ethical life, I would tell them to register to vote.
Yes.
And to vote in every election. It is the single most important thing you can do. Your local, state, and national representation, they're going to shape the legislation on issues pertaining to the climate crisis and environmental justice. And, you know, I grew up with parents who were so politically active, but it is only really recently, as an adult and as a mom, that I have taken time to volunteer for candidates in a meaningful way. And I feel it is, you know, our duty to be civically involved and engaged and actively participating in our democracy. So that, I think, is just number one, is to be a voter, and not just be a voter, but be an engaged voter who knows who's running for office, knows the issues that are at stake in your community.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that. And I think one thing that's come really forefront of my mind recently because of the pandemic that we find ourselves in is just truly seeing the impact of local governments too. I think, you know, national races and even statewide races get a ton of media time. But I think just even seeing the way that local governments are reacting to the situation that we find ourselves in, you know, how they're providing support to small businesses and to just people in general. I think, you know, if something that is happening in your local area, that if there's something that you love that's happening in your local area, that's one reason to go out and vote and say, hey, I want these people to stay. The opposite is true too. Like, if you're seeing things that you don't really agree with, or you feel like they could have been handled differently, you can go vote and help get some different people in there. So I think it's really interesting to think through the actual impact of that vote. Yes, for 100% agree with you.
Yeah, and a book I would actually recommend is Tools for Grassroots Activists.
Okay.
This book really had a big impact on me because it forced you to think about who do you need to influence if you want to bring about change? And that oftentimes it is just one or two people whose minds need to be swayed, say perhaps your senator or your congressperson or your governor. It is often more effective to focus and target efforts on the people with the power than on, you know, demonstrations to raise public awareness. That's a book that really deeply impacted how I think about my activism, and I totally recommend.
That's great.
And then in like the everyday, you know, we also vote with our dollars. And, you know, now more than ever, like, every dollar that you spend is a vote for that particular business. And we're seeing right now, you know, how fragile a lot of small businesses are. They don't have big reserves of cash like some, you know, multinational corporations do.
Yep.
to weather difficult times. So I am always thinking about every purchase I make, even when it's inconvenient and more expensive. I'd rather spend my money in places that I feel good about and buy fewer things and have fewer luxuries, knowing that they're, you know, ones that I feel excited about. I mean, books are one example. My book is coming out in just a few days. And I always try to buy my books from independent booksellers. The big, you know, Amazons of the world are not, they're not serving our communities. The money you spend with them is not helping your neighbors and, you know, the people who immediately surround you. And I know that, like, the siren song of free shipping and it coming in, you know, less than 48 hours is so tempting. But it's worthwhile to disrupt the habits you've, you know, formed shopping online and to start to think about how to spend the money right where you live.
Absolutely. And I actually used to work for Amazon back in the day. And I, every day I think about sort of what my impact was there and, you know, really how Amazon is actively impacting the world around us. And to your point, you know, I do think that supporting smaller businesses, supporting, you know, areas that you believe in strongly are just really one of the core values that we have here at Good Together. So that kind of leads me to our last two questions. So one is, what is your favorite ethical brand or product and why, along with that theme of voting with your dollar?
You know, this one, I don't have a particular product that I am super passionate about. I'm not a big shopper, but what I am really passionate about, you know, besides making do with what you have, is shopping secondhand. I buy everything secondhand. I always look to see if I can get something secondhand first. And, you know, it's to the point of eccentricity, but, you know, I buy pajamas for my kid on eBay. I have a coffee maker from the 1980s that was picked up at a yard sale. If it's possible to buy it secondhand, I will.
I love that. That is the best thing I've heard. I mean, I really think that having somebody that's passionate about that is just great. Do you get your friends call you to ask you questions about this? I feel like you're the one in the group that has all the tips.
Yeah. I mean, I think that some of it is like a skill over time, but I think a lot of my friends think I'm just strange. you know, they, and my husband, like, thankfully is in the same boat as me, but, it's, I like too, the feeling of buying something from another person.
Yes.
I figure that if a mom is selling her Hannah Anderson jammies on eBay, she needs the $20. and I'm happy to be putting it in her pocket. I love the thrill of discovery of, you know, looking in thrift stores and flea markets and antique shops and finding things that are one of a kind. And, you know, buying something that's had a life before, an object that has like a little history and a little patina of life to it, really, that for me is joy making. I'm the absolute extreme, and I'm the person who bought a used crib mattress. but you know, I really think that there's a kind of a renaissance happening too, where people who might not have considered shopping secondhand are, there's so many resources. You mentioned Poshmark before and ThredUp. There are dozens of startups that are selling things secondhand online, and people who might have been intimidated beforehand about, you know, going into like a thrift store are happy if they can look at, you know, high-res photos online and see that someone has quality checked something, you know, and that it's been professionally cleaned before they purchase it. So there's a lot of ways to live a secondhand life.
For sure. And you're right. There, it's becoming so much easier. There's ways to do it that fit with your comfort level and your budget across the gamut. So I think it's just such a great time. All right. So last question, Laura, you know, we've talked about so many different things in the context of the ethical and sustainable movement. But I wondered if you could share, what excites you the most about people who are choosing to live ethically and sustainably right now?
Well, it's a hard time to be excited right now.
Yes, about anything, right?
Yeah. Well, and the news related to coronavirus is, it's all consuming. It has pulled all of our attention just to trying to flatten the curve and help people in this time. But one thing that has come out of it that is a little bit hopeful is seeing how quickly people can change their behavior when there is this sense of catastrophe unfolding. And I feel like if more people begin to understand the urgency of the climate crisis, we can make the big changes that we need to make to ensure that there's a habitable planet for our children. And I think people are really starting to see the connections between it all, that it's not just, quote, saving the earth over in this one corner, but that it's tied into our politics and our economy. And so much of this is just sort of intertwined, and seeing that and seeing how cause and reaction happens and how it relates to climate. I think every day more and more people are having those realizations.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. I think, it's extremely hard to get excited about anything right now. I mean, we are in an unprecedented time for the world, and it's, kind of taking all anyone can do to just get out of bed and be a semi-functioning human being every day. But I also find a bright spot in understanding the impact that people are having by making these personal choices and really understanding that if we come together, we can make a huge difference. And I really appreciate you calling that out, because I think, it can be hard to find the positivity in a time like this, but it truly, to me, is going to be really interesting to see how consumer behavior changes after this. So like, maybe we will see people who are more excited about shopping locally, even more than they were previously, right? Like, people used to say shop small, buy small, and then they probably do a little bit of that and then go spend a ton of money on some of these online retailers. But, maybe now we're actually going to put our money where our mouth is. So that's exciting.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of energy in the world of environmental activism that, wasn't there 2 years ago. And that is another bright spot too, seeing people really wanting to be activists. The many groups that have emerged, that gives me hope too, that there are a lot of people who care and who are working every day to hopefully bring about change that will have a positive impact.
Absolutely. Well, Laura, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us at Good Together about all things small living. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. And as a special thank you to our listeners, use code GOODTOGETHER to get 10% off all products in Brightly's brand new shop full of planet-positive swaps for your home. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social, where I know you can find us at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with Geico.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.